The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's do this on the pod because, you know, Paul Burmeister played college football. Put your finger on his head Wednesday and see what happens. Just like see what happens if his instincts kick in.
Okay. Okay. Still- I'll do that to him. I'll tell him it's from you.
All right. That's right. I'm not going to do that to you. All right. The next time we see Ahmed, we should both put our finger on his forehead.
Wouldn't bother me. I don't have that personal space issue thing.
I never have either. I mean, I have. But I mean, I guess if somebody did it and they were yelling at me like Deron Payne was.
Right.
That would be a different thing.
Yeah.
But there is definitely a no-no about touching someone's head or face, really, in kind of man's world in general.
Yeah.
Some guys have a little more issue with it than everybody else.
Clearly.
I mean, clearly.
Yeah.
Definitely. But like, I know there was. I've seen athletes in all sports. So I heard it's like, don't touch my head. There's a famous baseball player who's kind of famous for that too. I want to say Nelson Cruz or whatever.
Okay.
He's kind of like that. But that was some punch.
Man, oh man.
And if that landed.
That wasn't just like, hey, get away.
No, that was the haymaker. We're going to knock you into next week.
Yeah, that was the one.
That was unbelievable. And I've said before, I had that little issue once in my life. I was messing around with a linebacker on the Bucks one year, Adam Hayward.
Yeah.
I mean, he was tough as hell, special teams guy, probably 6'2", 240. This guy right there.
That guy?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, I don't want to miss that guy.
That was a mistake by Chris to do that. Chris learned don't touch grown men who can beat your ass. Don't touch their heads.
He snapped.
Like, we were kind of joking around and having fun. We always kind of, like, talk crap and whatever. And I kind of, like, talk crap and gave him the, like, you know, like, hey, you shut your mouth like that.
Yeah.
And I kind of like walked away thinking like, yeah, this will let everybody a laugh or whatever. And I turned around and he was like in my face like, don't you ever touch my head again like that. I will beat your fucking ass. Like,
how'd you defuse?
I defused it and I literally was like, I'm sorry, man. Yeah. I was just joking around.
The good heart apology.
I was just joking around. Like, I know the battles you can win and lose. And that was one Chris wasn't going to win. So
you've
that
got
was
a good
it.
Wingspan. I'm sitting here like, if anything ever happened here,
yeah,
where we're sitting,
right.
Could you reach me?
I don't know if I can reach you. But, you know, listen, if it's a boxing fight against him, maybe I can hang in there for a little bit. But as soon as he gets me on the ground, he's going to overpower me and just beat the crap out of me. So, don't mess with big people and don't touch their heads when you're not supposed to.
A good reminder.
Yep, good reminder.
A good way to kick off of what the fuck happened. Last one of this calendar year.
Last one of the calendar year. Yeah. Chris Sims, What the Fuck Happened, Unbuttoned Podcast on a Wednesday presented by Under Armour. As usual, Paulie B here to drive the ship as always. Please subscribe, rate, review. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about today.
We do.
Yeah, I mean, the league's exciting right now. There's a lot of good storylines. Playoffs coming around. COVID's everywhere. Mm. That's freaking annoying. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. But either way, we got some real football stuff to talk about today.
And the first individual we're going to get into, I guess it's a team as well with the Buffalo Bills, but Josh Allen. I think he deserves, earned the right to be the lead story here. And to get into Josh, I want to start just this way. In the AFC East, there's a couple of things right now that are coming off the weekend, Chris, like just to be celebrated. First of all, Miami didn't lose in November and December.
Right.
Talk about Tua, talk about the defense going up against quarterbacks who aren't great. They didn't lose in November and December. That's awesome. Just like as a fan, that's a cool thing to have around.
No doubt.
The individual version of that from the weekend to me is Josh Allen played in probably the biggest regular season game of his career.
Right.
And he was phenomenal. Awesome. Like, applause for him, not as a fan of the Bills, but just as a fan, a guy showing up on a big moment with a giant performance. How much better could it be than Josh Allen in Foxborough over the weekend. We're taking a look at it right now. 30 out of 47, 314 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He ran for 64. I think he dropped back over 50 times, Chris.
Right.
Not a sack.
Yeah.
Not a fumble.
Right.
Not a pick. And his team won. Outstanding.
I'm glad you're saying it. And again, first off, I'm just going to start like absolute tragedy. He's not in the Pro Bowl. No way Lamar Jackson should make it in there before him this year. I mean, no way. So that's stupid. I just want to tell that to everybody. And then unreal performance.
Yeah.
To jump off what you're saying. Unreal performance. We really have not seen people do that to the New England defense. Not like really in any year, let alone the years when they're a top five-ish defense in the NFL, and we know they're famous for their pass defense, and that's their strength and their bread and butter. And then it's let alone when you go, wait, there's not really much of a run game to worry about in Buffalo. Oh, no, that's an issue. They really only have Stephon Diggs. Ooh, that's kind of an issue.
Yeah.
Right? So you got all of those things that you thought, well, that means they're going to be able to really focus on Josh Allen. And that's what we're going to show. Basically, like, it didn't matter, like, to your point. Josh Allen was off the rails good.
Yeah.
He is officially, I don't care, if you're not ready to put Josh, like, Allen in one of the five best players in football conversation, then you're just a hater. That's all I got to say. The guy is unreal. He's carrying the football team. They did a lot of good other things. We'll show that on the defensive side of the ball, too.
Yep.
But Belichick called every defense under the sun in the game.
Kind of looked that way watching on
TV. Every defense under the sun. And it did not matter. Even on the plays where his defense won, to your point, Allen escaped the pressure. Oh, wait, they called the perfect blitz. Oh, I'll make him miss and scramble out and still get a 10-yard game. And that's when you start to get the Bill Belichick hug at the after the football games.
That was cool.
That's when you know. That's when you've reached, like, Peyton Manning, that's what he does with Aaron Rodgers, you know, Ed Reed. That's when you know you've reached the, we do a lot to game plan for you and we still can't stop you. So I'm going to come over here and give you a hug because you're officially on the Bill Belichick all-time team. And that's where I think Josh Allen's gotten now.
Nothing for an athlete like the respect of another athlete or a coach, whether it's in your locker room or not, that you think a lot of as well. So that's something he can hang on to forever too. Couple things to piggyback on that. Number one, it's not like they okey-doked New England with they kind of tricked him or some kind of a surprise. They knew coming in it was going to be all Josh Allen.
Yeah.
So to have that kind of performance when everybody knew it was on him.
Right.
Without a lot of help.
That's right.
That adds to it.
It adds to it.
I will add on one concern, though, for the next 6, 7, 8 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you can can you expect Josh to be an A-plus every game? No, you can't.
I know.
If he's a B-plus or a C-plus, do they have enough around him so they advance in January? I don't know.
That's a real question. I think it's a real question by you. There's no doubt. You know, last year, listen, what they did, it was magical and all that.
Yeah.
You know, his play went to another level. The way they attacked defenses kind of caught everybody by surprise. It's not catching them by surprise. There's more on his shoulders this year. This is why I thought they would lose a few more games this year, because I went, I don't know if you can really replicate what he did last year. That was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen some games where, Jacksonville, he did some dumb stuff. But to your point again, it's all on him. And I don't know if you can replicate that going through the playoffs either. They're tough on defense. They're well coached. And he's as good a playmaking quarterback as we've already ever seen in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, playoffs, extra focus, all of that, rising to the big, you know, big lights occasion and all that. And then Josh Allen's going to be – nobody's going to want to see him rolling into town come playoff time just because he's so unstoppable a lot of the time.
There are always stats and numbers and figures that come out of a weekend that can kind of skew things and make you think, boy, it didn't look that way, but this number looks good. This looked exactly the way it represents here. 3rd and 7 or more. Josh Allen was 6 out of 7, 67 yards for 5 first downs and a touchdown against the Bill Belichick defense.
Right.
That was doing they did a number of different things, like you pointed
that
out.
That ruins everybody on 3rd and 7+. Like, nobody in the history of Bill Belichick has never, like, no one ruins them on 3rd and 7
long. 3rd and 7 against a Belichick defense. Like, what would be good getting a first down? 30%?
I mean, probably.
30% would be good.
I would say so.
Would be really good.
Yes, yes.
20 would be acceptable.
You know, I got to look at the league-wide conversion rate against all defenses with 3rd and 7+ is probably in the mid-30s,
well,
I would
Cincinnati's
think.
Cincinnati's last – their defense is last in the NFL.
Right.
Pardon me, it's not Cincinnati. The L.A. Chargers defense.
Yeah.
I was just looking at this. Chargers' third down defense is the worst, just over 50%.
Okay.
So, I mean, keep that in mind when you think about 3rd and 7 or more that he did that. So that's what Josh Allen did, just talking about it. I'd love to see a little bit, some
Let's
examples here. Let's start with a three-yard touchdown to Isaiah McKenzie first quarter.
Well, right. I mean, hey, the thing we're going to show here more than anything, and the point of all this is just like it's what we're going to show, I think, two, three plays here of Josh Allen. It's just that the Patriots exhausted every option. They called every defense Belichick's ever run in his life to try to slow down Josh Allen. And, you know, what Josh Allen does is, you know, here's would be the first thing I would just say about the game in general. They did a great job, for the most part, not playing dink and dunk football. It's not going to be here on the, you know, the 3-yard line going in. But they called a lot of plays that were aggressive down the field. And they trusted Allen to make the right decision. Hey, if it's there, let it rip, go get it. If it's not, we trust you. We'll have somebody underneath working some coverage there, and you'll go to the ball that way. I mean, 4-man rushes, all-out blitzes, cover 2, double this guy, 3-man rushes with a QB spy. All of these things were run by Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots in this football game, and it just didn't really matter. And here's one I'm going to show you right off the bat. This is where third down, you know, I mean, it's a fourth down, excuse me. It's a kind of a 4-man rush, but it's a 4-man rush in the fact of, like, there's really a bunch of guys just spying him and trying to keep him in the pocket.
Two guys just spying him.
Two guys really just spying him. I mean, he's watching anything up the middle. You got a defender here at the 1-yard line. Van Noy, who's rushing in one of the four just to eat up the space, he's really paying attention to him to not, you know, escape the pocket and make a play with his legs to run it in from the 3 or 4 yard line. All right. And then this is where, to me, Josh Allen, and like you heard Belichick say this stuff, you know, he reads defense as well. He goes through all the reads on his side of the ball. You know, he's accurate. You know, he listed off all the issues Josh Allen poses. And this is, to me, where he's become a different player over the last 2 years. He just, wait, you know, he has the presence of mind. And this play right here, he's got 3 receivers to his right, 2 to the left. Okay, they want to throw it up top here, okay, and do this and have Devin Singletary come out and get a natural pick play with the 2 Patriot players. Patriots know it's coming. They switch it off perfectly. So that's where he looks first. Look, he's looking, and then it's like, oh, crap, wait, they passed this off perfectly. Now, okay, wait, it's a 3-man rush. In his mind, he tells himself that, okay, I got time. Let me sit here, go through the pocket. And the Patriots are trying to play, you know, a coverage in which they pass things off. As you can see down here, we got 2 under routes, right? Really what they're trying to do, McKenzie's the first under route. Miles Bryant's going to pass him off. Hey, Adrian Phillips, you got him. Now he's going to kind of sift off because he knows somebody else is coming off here to get the under route by Diggs. And then J.C. Jackson should come back here to help out McCourty, who's in a compromised position on running the corner route. That's kind of the way they're playing it. But again, we're playing a guy here now who's – this is no longer just great physical ability, oh, wow, plays. It's a guy who knows how to play the quarterback position the right way.
One word that comes to mind – I'm sorry, Chris.
Yeah,
a word that comes to mind as I'm watching and listening
– yeah.
Patience.
Patience is the key to this game.
It's patience and poise in the pocket. Like, as a quarterback, you drop back and you're expecting some rush right away.
You got a clock in your head. And
when
wait,
it's
–
yeah.
What am I – I got to be thrown in here soon.
When it's not there –
right.
What do you do? Do you take off and run because that's what your instinct is? Or do you stay and hang and look for somebody?
Right.
And he really did the latter.
It's a special skill.
Yeah.
You know, it's a skill that I know was beaten into his brain by Brian Daboll. This is something New England used to talk about with me when I was, you know, playing for Josh McDaniels in Denver or even coaching there. 3-man rush. Take a deep breath.
Mm.
You know, don't panic that you got to get the ball out. Let the play develop, you know. And if nothing's there, it's still a 3-man rush. Be patient. Buy some more time in the pocket. Compromise some coverage with how you look or where you look to see if you can move people. And again, this is where you're in a tough spot. Oh, hey, we'd like to rush 3 or 4 so we can't run. We'll keep him in the pocket. Well, he just goes, oh, fine. I'll stay in the pocket. All right, fine, man. We can't let him do that. He's going to tear us up. Let's blitz somebody. Oh, shit, he escaped the guy and still got a completion. And that's where he's unbelievable. And as you see here, again, the patience and the trust they have in him right now, I think, says it all. Just sits there in the pocket. What a quick release. Patriots can't pass it off quick enough. There's too many things they're worried about. Adrian Phillips here at the 1-yard line, who's responsible for McKenzie. You know, again, he sees the guy coming across, but he's also taking a peek back because he's going, wait, this guy might run. I got to be ready to pursue him that way. He takes that last peek at Josh Allen. Too late. Guy's gone. Touchdown.
It was a great reaction by McKenzie, too, wasn't it?
It was good. It was a laser, and it was a good job by him. McKenzie, this just in. McKenzie is the second best receiver on the Bills. Mm. He's more dangerous than Cole Beasley or Emmanuel Sanders. I don't when they play him, he makes plays. I don't know why he doesn't play more, but to me, he was a difference maker in this football game. He's one of the few guys on their team that I go, you play one-on-one, you better watch out because he can run away from you. And really, him and Diggs are the only two guys that do that to me.
One-on-one, whether it's one-on-one says it's man, but I mean, it's a lot about instincts.
Yeah.
That was kind of a zone-ish kind of situation where he was supposed to come underneath, and his sense just took him over the top.
Yeah.
After he realized Josh had more time, he found that spot in the back of the end zone.
Found the spot.
I don't think the play call really sent him there.
Yeah.
He kind of probably sent himself there.
Right. I think so, too. I'm not really sure 100% there. Either way, he found the right place to go.
Yeah.
Allen hit him, and it was another shot of what we're going to show you here again. Different defenses. Belichick. We could spend the whole show showing you different defenses Belichick tried to throw at the guy.
Yeah.
Just doesn't matter. He's smart. He's talented. He's been coached well, and he was ready for prime time in this one.
I mentioned a couple moments about the success Allen had on third and seven or more. This is early third quarter, third down and 10, and he finds Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is where it's just like, this is when you get classified into, well, what the fuck do we do to stop this guy? I don't really know. It's the perfect defense by Bill Belichick and company. I mean, they exposed the pass protection here, as we're going to show.
Well, they've got the to start out with five or six, who's coming, who's not
exactly
thing going
right.
on.
They got the look we talk about all the time.
Yep.
There's five guys across here, who's coming, who's not, I'm not sure. And really, one, two, three, four are to the right of the center. So, you know, they're scared of that. They're scared of that, so they're going to send the left guard, the center, the right guard, and the right tackle out to get them. Well, you know, this is where, you know, knowledge of opponents. We've played this guy. I know Brian Daboll. Well, then that leaves Duggar wide open to rush. They've cracked the code on this pass protection and what they were going to get in this formation. So not only did they do that, okay, but now it's a four-man rush. You see one guy's totally free. You got two guys dropping out underneath because they're worried about crossers, right? So, oh, the crossers are screwed. You're not going to be able to throw that. All right, you got a guy here waiting for the back out of the backfield. There's nowhere to go, and the protection is screwed over by a great defensive play call by the Belichicks. All right, and you go, Belichick's probably sitting there going, well, we're going to win this play. Yep, we're going to win this play. We're going to win this play. We're going to win this play. We're going to win. What? He threw the ball 20 yards across the field. I mean, that's just insane.
So, I mean, some guys just have the license, because if it was a pick, everybody would have been rewinding and say, this is just something you can't do with this much experience, rookie mistake. But
you
allow a guy with this kind of talent to make a ridiculous throw like
that's
this.
That right? To me is the point. To me, like, it started with the first guy I ever saw get the green light to a degree was Brett Favre. Mm. Rodgers does it a little, but Rodgers is more careful. Mahomes and Allen are the first ones I've seen where it looks like the coaches don't even say, don't do that.
Yeah.
They're just like, if he's open, go ahead. We don't give a damn.
Yeah.
You'll get it there.
Right.
It's odd. I mean, these are, as we know, we grew up around this. I mean, these are quarterback no-nos.
Mm.
But here is a play where the Belichicks called everything perfect. The play should be stopped. It's third and 10. And he makes this play, and they end up getting 12 yards for a first down on the perfect defensive call. And that kind of just encapsulizes, am I right about that? Or encapsulate. It's the second time today I think I've used encapsulizes.
That play was a good snapshot.
It was a good snapshot. I like that too. There we go. That's easier for me to say. A good snapshot of these both plays, of just what he got throughout the day.
Right.
He was always mentally in the right place. And I think, again, the big thing, you know, there was enough of a run game where the Patriots couldn't just go, oh, we can just play pass all game. They did just enough and sprinkling that in there to keep them honest. And to me, the other thing, too, is, you know, I feel like in previous matchups, the Bills against the Patriots, and I know the Windy game a few weeks ago is a tough one, but even the two last year, there was more of a short passing game attack. Let's try to be surgical. And I don't know what the reasoning was, but in this one, to me, it just felt like with my eye that there was more plays called to attack them down the field.
Mm.
Attack them down the field. Make them cover that. And it's kind of the New England approach for when they want to throw the football. And I tell people this all the time. You know, New England, when they want to hit Edelman over the middle or do that, you know, their genius was they called aggressive down the field passing plays to where it got the defense backed up and away, and Brady would read it out knowing, like, wait, this is really a coverage. I'm going to go down to the short guy, you know, but I'm going to still look at it just in case a guy falls down and maybe I got the post route or whatever. But knowing that I'm going to come to the short guy mm-hmm. and get my completion there if they play too much of a pass defense down the field. And I really got that sense throughout the game. That pressure really compromised the Patriots. They didn't trust it. They didn't trust defending Josh Allen's arm down the field.
Right.
And then the other thing I think it did do, too, was it did help with the running game a little. And we talk about this, too, when you spend people downfield. It gives the quarterback some room to run.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's a big lane that opens up, and it's, oh, damn, he's going to rip off 20 yards here. We're kind of screwed because we're downfield covering 40-yard routes down there. That was a little bit of a change up to me for what the Bills did on that side of the ball, too.
Yeah, it was, just a couple plays there. You could have picked so many different plays to demonstrate, number one, how many different ways the Patriots tried to defend him
yep.
and all the different ways or different answers that Josh had for him.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a peek at the other side. It's
right.
kind of like the flip side of this matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Josh was the lead. But when you go to the Patriots offense against the Bills defense, what'd you see there?
Yeah, the Bills did a great job on first and second down. Hey, the Patriots are the king of, we're second and six. We can kind of do anything we want. It's third and two. We can run it. We can run a reverse. We can run a screen. We can throw a 30-yard pass. And you're just, what defense do you call to stop all that stuff? So the Bills did a phenomenal job of winning first down. The Patriots were in second and eight or nine or ten throughout the game. And the biggest thing that I think that sets that up is, you know, again, the run game was good by the Patriots, but it wasn't the same gashing that they got the first time around. You know, hey, they ripped off a few big runs. There's no doubt about that. But the first time around, it was we ripped off a big run, and every other run was 6 or 8 yards to go along with it. This time around, it was, all right, you ripped off 30, but the next three runs were 1 and 2 mm-hmm. and 1 and 2 and 1 and 2. Okay, now you ripped off 15. And to me, that gave them a fighting chance. It really did. They were very disciplined in their run fits, and they crowded the line of scrimmage to stop the run. And, you know, you've heard me use this phrase. They shoot gaps. Shoot your gun. You know, don't sit there in the gap and wait for them to come to you and let the blocking develop. Just run through the damn gap, create chaos, because more than likely the running back's going to run through that same gap that's a big hole too. And that to me is a little bit of what they did. They had a better feel of what the Patriots like to do in the run game. So, of course, they were greased up and coached up on that off the last film to how to stop that a little bit better. And really, the Bills controlled the flow of this game throughout. You know, I know the Patriots stayed in there and made some great drives and hung in. And, of course, you know, it was a one-score game late in the fourth quarter. But the flow of the football game, in my opinion, was always on the Bills' side of the field.
Get you back up here to watch a play or two. Patriots did have some success running the game. Early second quarter touchdown run from Damian Harris. If we could dial that one up,
yeah.
that was a big part of the first half. And it showed that New England did, early on anyway, in the first half.
Yeah.
Have limited success.
Well, they did. It's good success. But they want to be like a team that's going to go like, wait, we ran it 22 times
yeah.
with our running back, and that running back had 130.
Yeah.
And then our other three running backs got 8 or 9 carries, and they both got like 40 yards too.
Right.
And you just go, well, shit, everybody on the fucking football team's got a 5-yard
yeah.
average per carry. You know, that's where I think they slowed it down to a degree. This, I want to just show this because this was a play that kind of gashed the Bills the first time around. And to me, this is just what I'm really showing here. This is a positive for the Patriots and just what they do a little bit. Bills were all over because the first time they played, okay, I mean, the backside pulling guard with the fullback leading the way like we're seeing here. I mean, you'll see here, Karras pull guard, fullback leads up, you know, block down, block down, block down. That killed the Bills the first time around. Second time around, the Bills are ready for that. And I'm going to show you some clips for it here in a second. They made all the proper adjustments at the second level when people pulled or that extra gap was formed on the front side. But what I want you to watch here is this is all a play about we think they're going to overplay the play we gashed the first time, right? He's going to pull. That's Matt Milano, great player. His key is to watch him. Watch him as they do the pull and do all the action of the pulling guard power play and then flip it to Damian Harris at the backside. This is just great game planning, you know, seeing one step ahead of knowing like, hey, they're going to overplay that run we killed them with. And what I really, again, watch Matt Milano. I'm not trying to make fun of him. Like I said, this guy's one of the better linebackers in football. But he's keyed into what he's being coached to do. Watch how long he continues to stay in his gap, because we pointed out the first time with the long run, it was his gap where they ran the toss, same kind of power play, and then he cut back all the way for the long touchdown play. This one, he's all keyed on where he's supposed to go. Look, he's still in his gap.
He's still in his gap. Look at him over here. And he's still in the gap. Wait, that cutback's going to come. And he just looking, realizing that, wow. Oh, no, he's wow. gone. So, the Bills were phenomenal, and they won the battle throughout the day.
Yeah.
But that was one cool play of, hey, you know, New England, you know, they're always going to have something for you if you overplay something too much. And that was their kind of go-to play of the day a few times of third and short, whatever. We'll flip it out there because they'll be condensed trying to stop some of the inside power run game.
You alluded to it a moment ago, and stay right there, that the Bills got better about playing that.
Yeah.
As the game got longer, we always hear this thing at halftime, which team will adjust more and come out of the break better than they were in the first half. Let's see the ground game again of the Patriots how Buffalo kind of came back a little better.
Yeah, they definitely came back better. You know, and like I said, the big thing is they won on first and second down. Now you're making a rookie quarterback against a pretty good defense have to read coverages in long distance situations. The other thing I'm going to show you about with the Bills covered really well. They were not afraid to play man-to-man on the Patriots. And the Patriots, you know, they're good receivers, but they're not weapon dangerous guys. And they said, all right, let's roll the dice there. All right, so here, listen, this is going to be tough from this angle, but this is where I want to show everybody a little bit. Okay? Right now, Carlos Basham. He's got that gap right now in between the receiver, all right, and the left tackle, all right? And now – it's hard to see because we're not in the end zone copy here. But then there's Teron Johnson. Teron Johnson's gap is on the outside of that's Jacoby Myers, okay? So that gap, all right, he's got the edge here because they're afraid, of course, he's going to block down and now there's going to be there. So he's got the edge there, all right? So I'm going to go through this one more time. He's got the edge off the tackle in between Jacoby Myers, right? He's got the true edge setter outside of Myers, all right? Now we got, let me just make sure, Edmonds. In this gap between the guard and the tackle, Phillips between the guard and the center, all right? You got linebacker, I believe that's Matt Milano, and responsible for the other guard and center gap on the right. Ed Oliver between guard and tackle, all right? And now we got Rousseau in between here, between the two tight ends, and then Poyer in between the tight end and the right tackle. I hope everybody listening out there can understand that. That was tough. I understand that. Either way, these are their gaps, all right? They're going to run a play where Jacoby Myers is going to go in motion, and like I always tell you, now another gap is formed on the other side, right? There's going to be another gap here because he's going to block, and now you got to worry about this gap in between him and another gap on the outside. Where the Bills were really good throughout the day was when this came, okay, like this, they all bumped over one gap. As they see this, and this is incredible coaching and recognition, to where when they see this motion go, he now knows he doesn't have to worry about the gap outside of Jacoby Myers. Am I making sense to you, Paul? Yeah. If I'm not, then tell me. All right?
I'm on it.
All right, good. Because if you're not following, then the people listening ain't following too.
Yeah.
So he knows that's gone, that gap. And like I told you, here Basham, he's got the outside edge of Wynn on there. So now they're bumping everybody over one gap. Edmonds bumps over a gap. Milano bumps over a gap. Jordan Poyer bumps over another gap because there's one less gap to worry about on the backside because this guy's going to go, and one more gap's formed on that side. And that's where great running offenses get you sometimes, as they do that type of stuff. So, again, here was Edmonds responsible for the gap between the left guard and the left tackle, all right? But now when that Myers goes at the snap, okay, Teron Johnson took over that gap. And now Edmonds went to the gap Matt Milano was responsible for between the right guard and the center. And now Milano went to the gap that Poyer was responsible for, and now Poyer bumps outside. I'm sorry, that's a lot of talking. But either way, this just shows you, first off, how great of a coach Leslie Frazier, McDermott are to – be able to teach their guys this, for them to be able to realize, listen, you can even see, look at the top of the screen here, Matt Milano as he's hopping. He's kind of almost like, look, he can see, he's almost like pushing Jordan Poyer over, like, get over there, you got to get out there, I'm in your gap now. The things have changed. There's going to be another gap here after this, and he comes here and tries to get on the edge. And they're all over it. So it shows two things. It shows one, unbelievable snap, like after the snap adjustment and read and recognition by their defense. And then the other thing is, I want you to watch Taron Johnson. What did we tell you? Like, if there's a huge hole, run through it. Because he's going to run through this hole if he doesn't. Like, this is going to be Damian Harris cutback lane run once he sees all these backers kicking over to the strong side. But he's not going to cut it back when you got a guy shooting your gun and running through the gap. So now he's stuck and he has to go front side. That's just a little bit of what they did.
Yeah.
How well they're coached. Again, they're not the biggest defense in the world. They did have Vernon Butler back, which helped them. It's a big body in there at 330 pounds.
But they had a better understanding of how they were attacked off that first game, and right. They executed it the right way. And again, they got run on, but they didn't get annihilated in the run game.
And they got better as the game went on,
They got better as the game
important.
Went on, exactly right, and controlled the game flow to where the Patriots couldn't – they had a throw. We got to keep going. We got to extend the game. We can't stop Josh Allen. So
right.
We got to do that, and that's where they controlled the game. Yeah.
I want to get to when they had to throw and what Mac Jones did and didn't do. That was such a complex explanation, so much nuance there.
I know.
Is that adjustment that they made there in the second half, and that worked very well in that play,
yeah.
is that a post-snap adjustment or an in-huddle call, you think?
I think part of the in-huddle call that they've prepared for all week.
Okay.
And they know that within that in-huddle call, that if something like that happens, we have to make the post-snap adjustment. You got to have a defense that's played together and some linebackers that are smart and really know the system. And that's what they do have. Edmonds, Milano, A.J. Klein, Poyer, Micah Hyde, their second-level defenders are high-level defensive players. So he can trust them to make those post-snap
that
adjustments off
that. That was the word that came
to
mind. I was thinking, man, Leslie Frazier must really trust those guys.
No doubt.
All of them.
He's got it. I think those guys are real football nerds. Like, love the game.
A lot of veterans out.
A lot of veterans have been there for a while.
Thinking about that lineup, yeah.
No, you're right. It's a lot of veterans. You said it right. Edmonds is, this is year four for him.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Milano, I think, is a year or two older than him.
Poyer, Micah Hyde. Seems like we were just talking about him in the draft, but he's been around for a while
now. This is year three for him. Yeah. Right. I know. So, yes, they're greased up, and they're two hell of a coaches on that defensive side of the ball.
As for the Patriots, when they had to throw the ball, they found themselves in that spot. Nobody wants to be down in the second half, but they especially don't want to be down with how their offense works. Revisit a word here we brought up earlier, snapshot.
Yeah.
If you could think of a snapshot for how Mac Jones played in this game, what can we see?
Yeah, well, this is going to be, again, the great understanding of the Bills knowing how they were going to be attacked by the Patriots. And because they win first and second down or know what to expect off of certain plays or formations, they were all over some stuff. They really were. I mean, this is going to be a cool play to show. This is a famous New England play, the pop pass, okay? I mean, it's going to be very similar to the first play we showed, okay, where it's going to be a backside pulling guard, all right? And then within that backside pulling guard, like I told you, another gap is formed. So now the guard's gone. 99 now has that whole gap between it, and the backer's got to kick over a gap. They show all of this on this play, all right? But within that, A.J. Klein, who, here before the snap, all right, I'm just going to try to snapshot this here for a second. A.J. Klein, it's hard to see from this angle, is responsible for the gap in between the left guard and the left tackle, all right? He's responsible for that gap, but that gap disappears because the guard pulls. So now he's got to bump over. He does bump over, and you'll see all of them bump over to a degree. But it's the great ability of read and react once he knew or saw the pass set from maybe the other offensive lineman to get back underneath and make things cloudy for Mac Jones. Contest a throw, make you throw into a tight window. And he gets a hand up on it, intercepts the pass, and another big play by the Buffalo defense. Mac was not on his best game, missed a few throws, all right? I mean, Mac at times gets too much into the over-the-top throwing, in my opinion, a little. That gets him in trouble, makes him miss a few throws. But for the most part of the day, it was good, tight coverage, understanding where they want to go with the football. And, the fact that I think they didn't fear New England man-to-man-wise really helped them
It helped them keep an extra body in the run game in the box.
Yeah.
Helped them win on first and second down, like I said. And, yeah, they got him in some uncomfortable third down situations, and that's why he went 1 for 10 on third downs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
1 for 10.
And you line that up with the success Allen had on third down. It's a big part of the game.
No doubt about it is.
I mean, I'm glad you showed that play by A.J. Klein, the smarts and the athleticism, because when we think about a pass defense doing well, we think about, oh, the D-line must have got there. DBs must have had really tight coverage.
Right.
Linebackers
have
can,
a lot
can
of
come
effect.
In and play and play a big part in it too.
100%. To me, the second level guys get overlooked a lot of times in really good pass defenses. And I would go, if you go through history and look at pass defenses, they have good safety in the box, two linebackers that are athletic, can cover ground, you know, have wingspans that can give you issues there.
Yeah.
You know, that's the point. And they have athletic guys who understand football and can really read and react and move at a high level.
Any overriding concerns, you know, stepping back from this one game, looking at the last two for the Patriots, that's two losses in a row to contenders in the AFC. Not like nitpicking any one thing or one scheme that didn't work in any two games, but the two together, any concerns that you walk away there for New England offensively or defensively moving forward?
I think they're going to have to scare people just a little bit more on first down with throwing the football. Not let them all just overplay the run game all the time. And, you know, I'd like to see them take a shot or two more, too.
A little more
just
aggressive.
To back people off a little bit. Yeah. People are so worried about the run game right now and trying to stop that and overcrowd the line of scrimmage. And they went through a period of time where it didn't matter and they still ran the ball on people.
Yeah.
But you're seeing people start to adjust and learn how to play it. To me, the Bills showed everybody at the end of the first matchup. And that's what a little bit what the Colts did, and we showed that last week about like shooting gaps, right?
Yeah.
We showed that a little. Same type of thing. Because Patriots are too well coached. You let the play develop just the way they thought you were gonna line up and be they're gonna block it perfectly. And you're gonna get moved and they're gonna get an 8-yard run. So teams are going, okay, we know they're gonna block it perfectly. Let's be in spots where it messes up their blocking. They can't get to the next guy off the double team and let me get to the second level. And I think that's the thing we're seeing a little bit more to where, yeah, it's putting a little more pressure on Mac Jones in the passing game.
Both teams playing at home now. Buffalo hosts the Falcons. The Patriots host the Jaguars. Both teams ought to be fine this weekend.
Yeah.
Or any kind of flags you want to raise there?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, really, the Bills, I expect them to win the last two games. The Patriots, of course, this week, I expect them to win and then got – you know, a tough one to go down in Miami, which will be, you know, certainly for playoff seeding, maybe be in the playoffs in general.
Right.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win. Defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
Pretty deep dive there on the Patriots and the Bills. I want to do something similar here now with Cleveland and Green Bay. It was
right.
A fun game to watch that Green Bay won 24-22. But also, it was one of these games where you look back and look at what happened, look at the drives, look at the stats. There's some really interesting parts of this game.
Yeah.
What really jumped out for me, Cleveland rushed for 219 yards. Normally, a team wins, and a lot of times by double digits when they go over 200 yards. They had almost 9 yards per carry in the rushing game. We all know Baker threw four interceptions, but you look at Cleveland having that much success on the ground, yet still losing by a couple of points. What happened?
Well, hey, four interceptions is hard to overcome.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. Now, where I'm going to defend Baker is an interception 1 and 4, it was blatant pass interference. Mm. Blatant. I mean, blatant. The first one, I mean, at the very worst, it should have been an incomplete post route down the middle. They got it. They got Green Bay in a bad spot. Rasul Douglas just cuts Donovan Peoples-Jones off and doesn't let him run the post route. And that lets Darnell Savage get back and get the interception. So we got screwed that way. Interception number 4, you know, and one at the end of the game, a lot of people have been talking about, yeah, Rasul Douglas grabbed the guy and slingshotted himself forward to catch the ball. Should have been pass interference. So they got a little screwed over by that. Now, the other two interceptions in between, interception 2 and 3 by Baker, they were his fault, period. Yeah. Horrible interceptions. And it cost them points. You know, the first interception, they're in the red zone fringe. It's 3rd and long. He's got a guy open to the right. He's got some pressure. You know, the guy's open. He throws it off his back foot and misses it by 5 feet. It's intercepted. Costed them field goal. You know, then before the half, he's got Jarvis Landry going up the sideline. You know, he doesn't really read out the play. He doesn't let the guy who's clearing Stokes out completely clear him out. He just goes, it was open in practice all week. I'm going to fire it in there. And Stokes adjusted and saw it coming and makes the interception. I believe that was Stokes. I'm pretty sure it was. No, it might have been Shannon Sullivan on that one. I'm wrong. It was Sullivan. But, you know, those were big moments because then Green Bay went down and scored a touchdown for the half. You know, so those turnovers were certainly the difference in the football game. You know, so I look at that. But this is what concerns me about Green Bay, everybody. This is where I've been trying to say, I know they got the best record in football. I get it. They're not the most talented team in football. They're not the top 3 talented team in football. They're not a top 5 talented team in football.
They have the MVP.
They got the MVP. And it's all on him and execution, and we're not going to mess the game up. And that's all great. I just don't know. Again, I'm going to say it for the 50 millionth time in the last month. I don't know if that can get you to the Super Bowl. I don't know. Because Brady and the Cowboys, they got more talent. Prescott, Brady, they're going to execute.
Yeah.
They are. They're going to execute too. So what are you going to do when the other team executes like you do and yet they have more talent?
Yeah.
That's what scares me about the Packers is games like this where Cleveland was better than them, period. Yeah.
I mean, Green Bay seems very comfortable winning these games.
I know.
24-22, 27-20, like the tight one-score game. I mean –
Rodgers, on the edge.
I mean, Aaron, since week one, has thrown 2 interceptions.
Yeah.
I mean, they're able to win these kind of games because their quarterback doesn't turn it over.
Right, right.
Even the MVP can throw 2 a game like once every now and then.
Right.
Like, if it happens in January.
Right, against a good team, if he throws 1, it might be
what?
The difference.
Then what?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, to me, and that. So we'll break some things down. The run game for the Browns was dominant, 100%. The Packers' defense is good. It's well coached. There's a lot of good. There's no great anywhere. So let's go to it. Let's get to it. We'll get to the
run
game first.
Yeah.
You know,
we started there with the Cleveland run game. One note as you get up there, Chris, Browns are now 1-2 this season when they rush over 200 yards. Rest of the league is 21-3-1.
It's insane.
When they go over 200. But they did have some success we want to see here.
Yeah, great success. This was the run of their first half, okay? I mean, this was it right here. There was great, like, little concept. Center, right guard, pull out on the edge. Cut off block to stop him, cut off block to stop him, and you're going to see block downs, and then you're going to get Nick Chubb on the edge. This is what they killed him with in the first half, okay? You see there's our guy Wyatt Teller, probably should have been called for a low block on the defense right there who tried to decapitate his knee and take it off. I don't think it was called. You know, again, the referees in the NFL, I don't know what they're watching sometimes. It only happened right in front of the ref, but, you know, how dare he have to see that? But this was the play that continually gashed Green Bay in the first half. It was another play in the second half. But you see here, you know, the Green Bay Packers trying to kind of play a, you know, not a bearish front, but squeeze people in the middle of the offensive line. It is kind of a bearish front. It's a, like, kind of a bastard bearish front to a degree. They're trying to stop the inside run game. So, hey, what do? We're going to pin all you bastards in there and, you know, get out on the edge and run from there.
Seems like a good idea.
It's a great idea. And this is what killed them all first half. All first half, that was the run to go to. And then what happened, really, Paul, just so you know, and I'll just kind of just show here on the screen. In the second half, they kind of came back with inside zone cut. Green Bay got so worried about getting on the edge and stopping the edge, they started just go, force the edge and you'll find a cutback lane because they're going to be worried about these pulling guards and the blocking down. So first half, it was this run. Second half, it was inside zone that gashed them. And really, it was those two runs the whole game. Yeah. It really wasn't much else than that. There might have been one or two different things sprinkled in there, but with that offensive line, Bill Callahan coaching that running back, you don't need to be real tricky. You just got to have a good feel of what they're going to line up in and how they're playing you, and then just try to call the appropriate plays there.
Just need to not have three or four interceptions.
That was huge. Right. No doubt about it.
Other side, Packers offense. Before we watch some plays here, Chris, I want to show this number.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers in the first half versus the second half. A pretty big difference in the production in the passing game. So first half, MVP-like, 18 out of 23, buck 54, three touchdowns, no picks. Fantastic. Second half, just 6 out of 11, 48 yards. No touchdowns, no picks. But to me, what jumps out there, they only throw it 11 times, and they only get 48 yards from those 11 attempts. What happened?
Like, way too conservative. That's all I can really say. There was nothing done on the other side of the ball that was like, oh, wow, they changed.
Cleveland didn't come out in some, like, new-looking defense and more aggressive?
No. And this is my issue with Cleveland. They're the ultimate, like, this is what we do. This is it. We do it. We're going to execute it. Well, that's great. You know, the other team's got some good players. They know what you're doing, and they're going to execute some shit, too. Hmm. I mean, but it just became 24-15, and it became, you know, the first drive was not bad. They tried to reverse. It got them behind the chains. So they ended up being like a second and 20 situation. So, okay, they were screwed there. It was three and out. But Cleveland goes down now, you know, has a long drive, gets Green Bay back on their own territory here. And Green Bay, run up the middle, run the ball again on third and short. Didn't get it. Punted away. Okay. Cleveland gets the ball back. They go down and score. It's 24-22. Green Bay gets it. And it's I missed a drive there. They went another drive where they went three and out, okay, and ran the ball. All right, and then they tried to reaccelerate, all right, as far as when it got to 24-22. But they had two drives where, you know, they're up by 9 points where I would definitely call the conservative, to where, like, you know, again, I understand you're trying to run the clock and you're going to run the ball and do all of that. But they're playing some defenses, and you had a first half where you just go, you need to continue to teach them the lesson of they can't play these pass defenses. You have Aaron Rodgers. You're letting them off the hook.
Exactly.
That would be my issue there.
And tying together these last two games we've talked about, first of all, Buffalo and New England, and now Cleveland and Green Bay, it's one thing when you ask New England to, okay, let's be a little more aggressive on first down with Mac Jones. Easy to understand why they don't want to be because of his experience level. Having Green Bay be not aggressive or be passive with their pass offense doesn't make sense when you have Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it's the two opposites, Rodgers compared to Jones, yet the same ask or the same recognition about it. It was just a little conservative.
It's exactly what it was. And I think that's why a little bit sometimes it gets into a little bit like, you know, they like these one-score games. You know, again, you're going to get away with it against some of these teams that seem to screw it up by themselves a little bit.
Yeah.
But are you going to get away with that against Dallas or Tampa or Arizona or the Rams or the 49ers? Mm-hmm. I don't think you are.
Maybe the Eagles.
Yeah, maybe the Eagles, any of them. It's just I don't think you're going to get away with that style of play. Mm. And to your point, yeah, Rodgers, they're too good in the pass game to just like go, okay, we're going to run the ball up the middle and just run the clock out.
Yeah.
You know, to me, you're letting the defense off the hook, and especially when we add in the factor of how they defended Devontae Adams in this game.
There you go.
Which was they treated him like he was Paul Burmeister at wide receiver. They didn't even care. They were just like, he's another guy. Who cares?
Can't get off the line of scrimmage.
Stupid.
Yeah, it's going to run a 5-3.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that segue,
yeah,
let's take a look at Aaron finding Devontae Adams here. 9-yard touchdown first half.
This is my problem with this is the Seattle scheme. You know, and this is why you've seen Mahomes and company just totally annihilate the Raiders defense, right? And Rodgers here, you know, in the first half, like we're showing about, annihilated Cleveland. There's no, they just acted like he was another guy on the football field, even though 4 out of every 5 times they drop back, they look for number 17. But just treat him like he's normal. Who cares? All right, and hold on. I want to pull up their roster here because I'm going to mess up this guy's name, and I want to make sure I get it right, number 39, right? Because number 39 is covering Devontae Adams.
And right now, Rodgers knows he hasn't. I'm looking at this. He's in the first guy in the slot. There's nobody in the middle of the field anyway. So, and he's the corner's 4 yards off him. So if he wins.
And it's a rookie, Richard LeCount from LSU.
Georgia.
Georgia. Good job there. Yes. Like,
he has no help.
No help.
Like,
let's put our rookie
I'm offended
who hasn't played a lot on the guy who's maybe the best weapon for any offense in all of football.
And with no safety behind him to help.
No safety in the middle of the field.
I'm just going to show you we're going to show you the two touchdowns just to go like, I don't know then. You know, what's the point of drafting Denzel Ward at pick number 4? Greedy Williams in the second round. I know Newsom's not there. But, I mean, you got Greedy Williams covering DeGuara. Why? Why? Now, why do you got Denzel Ward covering Alan Lazard? You know, put LeCount on Lazard.
Yeah.
Put LeCount on DeGuara. Let one of your top two corners cover Davante Adams. Just stupidity. And then, like you said, just line up in it so Rodgers can just get ready and know what we're in. Like, oh, okay, so Rodgers can just drop back. He knows he's not protected. It's an all-out blitz. He's outnumbered. And look at all this fancy work Davante Adams had to do. He had to run and slightly take a right turn for a touchdown. I mean, are you kidding me?
It's almost like Rodgers, before the snap, could have called a little timeout and be like, you guys, I'm going to 17, and you got a rookie on him. You want to, like, put somebody, like, at the goal line to make it hard for either one of us?
I don't get it. This is like practice. This is practice. This is, like, literally practice. Again, run this. If you want to run this, fine. Great. You know, have this same look. Have one of these guys drop out and keep the inside coverage on him. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can do. But there was never really a plan of attack from Cleveland.
And this is what, you know, I said this in the first game of the year when they played the Chiefs. It was the same thing last year in the playoff game when they played the Chiefs. I mean, it was just like, oh, Tyreek Hill? We've never heard of him.
Yeah.
Well, why would we cover him? I've never heard. Is he good? Yeah, he's kind of good. Right, that's why you lose. I mean, it's just stupid.
Pete just hit me with this one.
Yeah.
The Browns have only had Ward cover a slot receiver. You said 10 total snaps, Pete? 10 total snaps.
Because it's the Seattle, your lineup outside, the Seattle defense. We don't play matchup.
Slot's always hard. That's how, like, I mean, you and I both see this through the offensive side. Like, sometimes you can beat a team through formation. You can line up and say, you're not going to have your best cover guy cover our best receiver because we're going to put him in a place where your defense doesn't allow your corner to go. So is it hard for him to cover the slot? Like, is he limited?
No, he's a phenomenal football player. To me, it's where you're wasting assets. It's
right.
Like you've heard me complain about the Rams when they don't play Jalen Ramsey in man coverage. I go, what's the point of paying him $20 million? We can get another guy to learn how to play zone.
Yeah.
You know, I know they might not be as good as him, but, like, let's get our money's worth. And their slot's hard.
Greedy Williams, 4 snaps in the slot.
Whoa.
4.
So, but slot's hard. And listen, there's plenty of teams that leave their good corners on the outside. That's fine. But then have a plan with the other guys to take him away.
But what if the best team in the NFC puts their best receiver by far in the slot all the time? Shouldn't you adjust?
No, they don't. I know. They should.
Yeah.
You're right. They have one play in the third quarter where they kind of double Devontae finally, because it's 100-something yards in 3 quarters. So they're finally like, oh, well, I guess we'll do something here.
Before they did that, I think he scored another touchdown.
Yeah.
You want to show us that?
Yeah, of course. But like, hey, J.C. Jackson was in the slot against Stephon Diggs the other day.
Right.
Right. Jalen Ramsey was in the slot.
You said it. It's hard. So because it's so hard, you may as well put your best guy there.
Right. Or you do, like, what the Patriots did when they had Darrell Revis. They go, Darrell Revis, you take the number 2 receiver, and we won't worry about him because you'll lock him down.
Yeah.
And now we'll double the number 1 receiver. And, you know, it's too hard to ask one guy to cover a great receiver. So we'll get 2 on him, and then you cover the guy that we know you can dominate. Find some combination to do it.
Yep.
Here we have the one everybody tuned in to see, MJ Stewart versus Davante Adams. Yeah, that's the guy we want covering the best red zone target in
straight
football.
Straight up man coverage. Obviously, he's staring at him, and he doesn't have a safety anywhere to help.
Again, Davante Adams in the slot right here, man to man. There's Lazard, Greedy Williams. There's Denzel on EQ St. Brown. Like, a good thing they got their best corner on EQ St. Brown, because this is the 4th play he's been in this game. So you got to watch out. It's obviously they're hiding it. I mean, it's annoying. As you can tell, I'm getting frustrated here.
Offended. But
I'm offended. You're right. So here we go. Little just max protection 3-man route, because, again, Cleveland's lined up into it, so they can just call the play and go, oh, we know what we're going to get. And here's MJ Stewart, who – he knows he does no safety help in the middle of the field, so he's playing a little inside leverage. There are linebackers there. right? I know that, but still, there's not much help from them. He has to play inside leverage here. You know, again, if he plays outside or head up, Rodgers could throw him a dart in this little dead area here between the linebacker and MJ Stewart. So he makes a great move right off the line of scrimmage because that's where Davante Adams is as good as anybody, creates a little separation. I mean, MJ Stewart's he's a big nickel. He's a safety.
And you got him covering Davante Adams. And, again, I could sit here and show you the rest of the plays all day. It's Davante Adams running through a cover three zone or running a slant against a zone. And just go, I don't study as hard as you guys do, and I know they're going to throw the ball here.
Like, everybody does.
Everybody does.
Everybody does.
Exactly.
Looking ahead, Minnesota at Green Bay Sunday night, Cleveland at Pittsburgh on Monday night.
Yeah, I mean – Cleveland should be able to run for 300 yards against Pittsburgh.
Man, oh, man.
I mean, they should be able to run all day long. So let's see if they can do that. Hey, the first time around, they kind of screwed the game up on the offensive side of the ball, too, and Pittsburgh got the big upset. I expect them to win. Vikings, I mean, they're going to be able to run the ball on the Packers, too.
Yeah.
There's a reason they beat them the first time around.
It's going to be single digits, too. It's going to be freezing.
Single digits. I always like Rodgers at home and those kind of elements, no doubt about it. But I think the Vikings will be a pain in the ass for the Packers in this one.
Okay, we put that one to bed, and I'm looking at this, and Pete, is this correct? It makes me a little bit sad as I'm reading this here, Pete. Chris, Under Armour read. Pete says it's our last Under Armour read with Paul.
I know. It's the last week for Under Armour. I mean, feel free to re-up Under Armour. Feel free. I'm a free agent right now.
I'm wearing the shoes.
It's got to be the shoes. All right, so here we go. This is my last one with Paul, who can compliment me on how well I read. We are supported by Under Armour, and just like us, Under Armour wants to give you an edge. They are focused on performing better and taking their game to the next level. Everything from running shoes that propel you forward to hoop shoes that give you insane grip. They even make hoodies that reflect energy. We're not just about the end result, winning, or glory. Under Armour is about the hard work, the dedication, the cycle of training, competing, and recovering. We give you advantages, but not shortcuts. The only way is through.
Good respect to the comma there. A lot of people don't respect the commas.
Thanks.
You had a little
I don't
pause.
Know where to use commas or how to use them, but when I see them, I know how to read with them. That's the one thing I do know.
You know what they're asking you to
I
do.
I know what
just
they're asking me to do.
Pause.
Yes.
Did you bring up to Ahmed Under Armour making a toothbrush that forced him to use it twice a day?
I felt like that's why Ahmed wanted me to push your forehead, because you probably got him on the toothbrush thing.
I did not hit him with that.
I know.
I was hoping you would. No.
Okay. I did not. I should have done that.
Still time.
I'll bring it up, though, on Monday, even though under I will just go, hey, you know, we're concerned about you. Can we get something to make you a toothbrush?
Okay, let's keep it in the NFC now, moving on with games.
Yeah.
Vikings, Rams. Rams won 30-23. Good news for the Rams. They're stringing together wins.
Yep.
I think it's always a good sign for a team this time of year when they find a way to win against a quality team when they're not at their best. I think you could say that about the Rams offensively.
Yeah.
Yet there's some concern about Matthew Stafford right now. What say you?
I say it's legitimate. I do. You know, and again, it's been better as of late, but not good enough yet to where I'm going, okay, he's got it. I mean, he's back. I know he was great against Arizona and made some big throws.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Seattle, 20-10. No, he missed some throws, and it was a little choppy on the offensive side of the ball. And then this game here, it was choppy. It's scary. It's a little scary. You know, the one thing I wrote in my notes, I went, man, the Rams have turned the corner. I mean, the special teams is good. The defense has got it going. The run game's got it going. I said Aaron Donald is playing like a superstar again the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was hurt a little bit early in the year or not, but he's just dominant. All right? They're using Jalen Ramsey the proper way. There's only one question. It's Matt Stafford, in my opinion. And you know I don't like to say that. I'm a Matt Stafford fan.
Yeah.
And I never like to make it about the quarterback.
What are you noticing? Like, we all notice the picks.
Right.
Go back and look at the stats.
Right.
Okay, that's not great.
Yeah.
What do you see when you watch him play?
There's just a little too much carelessness still with the football. Yeah, the three picks. He could have thrown five or six picks. You know, every game I've come away going, he could have thrown two more picks there.
Mm-hmm.
He could have. You know, and again, I know they're aggressive with what they do, but, you know, this is to me where I don't know if he's adjusted to Rams football quite yet. You know, this ain't Detroit anymore.
What's Rams football?
Well, they're a good team. You don't have to just be out there going, wait, we're the Lions and we stink and I got to make plays or we can't have no chance of even thinking about winning a game. No, you got plenty of players here. There is a time to be a little bit conservative, rely on your teammates, play the game the right way. Like, not, I don't want to say manage the game, but, you know, understand the big picture of the game. Don't just let it fly because, hey, I'm going to let it fly. I'm Matt Stafford and McVay and weapons. No. Mm-hmm. They've been winning games with Jared Goff managing games.
Yeah.
They got to the Super Bowl doing that. Don't just go totally one way. He's got to adjust a little bit. I don't know if he's not used to having the bullseye on his back for the first time. You think so? Maybe pressure of like expectations for the first time?
I remember sitting here in the offseason. Yeah. It was such a big story. We talked about it so many times, and there was so much positivity. And we were both super excited about what it could be, thinking about McVay and Stafford. But, I mean, for a decade, I mean, that mindset kind of starts to seep in. You're a 4-12 team. You're a 6-10 team. You're a 7-9 team. All were 2-14. And you're the quarterback of that team. I mean, part of that has to become part of how you play.
Yes.
And part of how you think during the game. And I've not been there.
Right.
Just, we spent so much time thinking about it in the offseason. I remember thinking about that going, I wonder if he can just leave that decade behind that way.
I think there's still – this is a work in progress still. I think that's the way to say it. It's still like getting out of this like, wait – this ain't Detroit. This ain't just like, just let it fly because we're no good and we need you to make plays.
Right.
And there's just no governor. The hell with it.
Yeah.
It's not. You know, again, the Seattle game last week, games in control, dumbest interception in the world down the middle to Quandre Diggs. And all of a sudden the game got dicey, you know, and they had to rely on penalty calls at the end of the game to win it. And this is what scares me. It's these type of decisions in these games where I go, you're going to get away with it against Minnesota. I don't know if you're going to get away with it against Tampa Bay or Dallas or the 49ers or some of those teams in the playoffs.
Right.
And that's where he's got to adjust.
You mentioned that even though he threw three picks, it could have been five or six.
Yes.
I think you have picked out to show kind of an example of what he did over the weekend. One that could have been a pick or should have been a pick here.
Could have been a pick, should have been a pick. I mean, you know, just again, some of the decision making is careless. The interceptions were pretty much all careless. All right, and so that bothers me, let alone there's a handful of throws, Paul, where I just go, somebody of Matt caliber Stafford should not miss some of these throws. So when you add that all together and you go, man, everything else on the Rams is going good, yeah, I guess right now I'm going to be the guy to tell you that, like, I'm a little concerned about Matt Stafford. I hope it goes away because you know I'm rooting for him. All right, here's a play. We've shown this play. We saw this a few weeks ago, I think, against the Cardinals. They're running the old corner post with Odell Beckham Jr., all right? Van Jefferson's going to run across the field. All right, so he does that. He's already thrown a pick at this point. Let me just – on this play already, all right, where he just threw it. I'm going to throw the deep throw and just throw it no matter what.
And this is early first quarter,
too. This is early first quarter. So here we are, all right, and he's rolling out, play action pass. They run this play twice a game, some version of it. But you could see here – the Vikings are ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Odell's not going anywhere. Get off of it. Stop waiting for something that's not going to happen. You played too much football to see this.
Backside in.
Van Jefferson's wide open. Mm-hmm. You're right. There's 20 yards of space. There's nobody around him. But he's going to continue to, let me just show this, going to continue to look downfield, downfield, downfield. Wait, he might pop open. I want to throw it.
How?
I want to throw it.
Yeah.
And now Van Jefferson's across the middle of the field, and – Eric Kendricks is there, who's a hell of a player, so he can't just throw a laser because he's afraid, hey, he sticks his hands up or whatever, he could tip interception. He's going to try to just drop the ball over here. Well, Dantzler's over here waiting. And this is, to me, this is just like, you're too good and you've played too much football to just throw a sidearm, let me loft it out there and see what happens. And it gets dropped. And Dantzler has it in his hands. He drops the interception.
Did you use that word careless already? Because that's
careless.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's careless. And that's, you know, again, it shows up every game right now with Stafford. There hasn't been a real clean game in a while. Mm. Jacksonville might have been clean. Okay, great. You know, but that was just kind of wearing them down and they weren't as good. I'm talking about, you know, clean against top quality opponents or higher quality opponents. Yeah, that would worry me a little bit.
Interesting game coming up. We'll see what kind of team Baltimore can field out there, if it looks different than the one that played against the Bengals. But they do play against the Ravens coming up. So I think it was yesterday, day before, I was in a conversation with Peter King on his podcast.
Right.
And he said, outside of the number one seeds in each conference, who do you pick as the most dangerous team? So in the NFC, I thought about it. I said, I'm going with the Rams.
Yeah.
They're winning again.
Yeah, I hear you.
But, I mean – do you think that the Cowboys or the Buccaneers or even the Niners or the Eagles would have been a better call?
They're still dangerous.
Yep.
And I still think there's hope of him being able to adjust here down the stretch and then get in the playoffs and go, wait, okay, hold on, fucking Matt Stafford. Like, he's got to talk to himself in the mirror a little bit. Would I say, you know, no, I don't think they're as dangerous as Tampa. I don't. That's that, and really, I probably wouldn't have said they're as dangerous as Dallas either now.
Dallas.
It's close, though. It's close. Dallas' D-line getting healthy brought them back to another level that, you know, I even said a few times already, like, shame on me for forgetting how deep and talented they are there. So I guess I'd go with go with them. But I don't – again, you know – I'm holding the Rams to your caliber. We're talking Super Bowl here. We're not talking about, oh, we got in the playoffs.
They clearly are too.
Yeah, and then this is the last phase. They need him to button it up a little bit if they want to become that dangerous team you're talking about, or be able to really reel off three wins in a row to get to the Super Bowl.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. First Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
Let's back way up. This game seems like it was a long time ago. Pre-holidays, Niners and the Tennessee Titans. San Francisco losing 20-17. Let's start with the San Francisco side.
Yeah.
After a few days to sort it out, what should their mindset be about how this one went down?
Oh, I mean, they should have been puking at home on Christmas Eve. That was as big an ass-whooping between two good teams, especially in the first half, that I've seen all year.
Yeah.
Where we went, wait, these are two playoff teams, and one team absolutely kicked the shit out of another team.
Yeah.
And it was only 10-0 at half.
Right.
That was the first problem. Because, I mean, how many times have we had this conversation? You know, you dominate, you let teams hang around in the NFL.
Yeah.
They're going to eventually get there. It was a total ass-whooping. Shanahan had all these great first half calls.
Boots, screens.
Yeah, the boots.
All of
exactly
it.
Right. That's what it was. It was boots, screens, and a few sprinkled in good drop back passes where Garoppolo threw the ball well. It did great.
Yep.
But as the game went on, it fell apart. And then Shanahan runs out of tricks. There's only so many tricks he can have, or game plan, like, hey, I got a play that's going to fuck your defense over. There's only so many you can have in the bag. So he got to the second half. You know, the Titans are used to the flow of the game. They survived the initial surge of the 49ers, which is a real thing to me because the 49ers are so fast and aggressive and just free-flowing, and then Shanahan's aggressive nature of calling all these crazy plays. You know, a lot of teams get overwhelmed by San Francisco early in the game, and it's just like, whoa, holy shit, it's 20-3, we're losing.
Yeah.
Like, what do we do now? The Titans hung in there. They took some haymakers and hung in there and luckily got some mistakes by Jimmy Garoppolo that really helped them win the football game.
And speaking of those mistakes, let's pick it up there late third quarter. I think on 4th and 6, this is at least a bad throw. Not a pick, throw by Jimmy G.
You know, we're not going to show the pick. You know, again, like we didn't show Stafford's pick. It's not about, like, you guys can, everybody can go on and look at highlights of that. Just go online, look it up. You'll see the, we don't need to show all those all the time. I want to show something a little broader. Hey, first interception, talk about it. Stupid as shit.
Yeah.
7-0 down there, dominating the football game. You just throw a curl route to George Kittle and Janoris Jenkins standing in front of him.
Yeah.
Like, you just, I don't even get it. All right. Missing Juszczyk on the wide open throw down the right sideline in the second quarter. I mean, touchdown, walk in. You and me are going to hit it 99 out of 100 times. They don't even get any yards out of it. Goes out of bounds.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, then the interception to start off the third quarter. I mean, trying to squeeze a ball over the middle. There's underneath coverage. There's two guys around him. Interception leads to a touchdown. So
does a game like that, a performance like that,
yes,
in that moment,
yes,
make you pull off the – because I know you're a believer in what they could do in January.
Yes.
Yeah.
But my answer to the question you're going to ask, yeah, is, does it make me doubt it? Yes.
Yeah.
It does. Because it just goes – again, he a little bit – you know, maybe to a lesser extent than Stafford, I just don't trust him,
yeah,
when the game gets thrown on his shoulders.
Right.
He'll have his moments, you know, and if he's playing like, you know, again, the poor teams in the NFL, he probably won't have his bad moments in those games.
Yeah.
But we see with better defenses, when it gets too much on Jimmy G,
it's
always a mistake or two.
It's mostly good with him. Like, you could reach into the bag his season and, like, pull out any three or four games.
No doubt.
It's mostly good.
It is.
But there's enough bad to make you be like,
that cost us a game.
Yeah.
We lost to Seattle in Seattle because he threw two dumb picks.
Yeah.
We lost in Tennessee because he missed some throws and threw two dumb picks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you can boil it down. This game came down to two things. 49ers blowing it, Jimmy Garoppolo interceptions, Titans just being tough and waiting it out and going, wait, we're bigger.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start to wear you down as the game goes along. Just, we got to hang in there. And then Ryan Tannehill on third down in the second half of the football game was insane, Paul.
Right.
Every time. It was third and 10.
Third and long.
Third and 22.
We'll get there.
I know. Okay, we'll get there. All right, good. I'm sorry.
But it was great.
It was great.
Right.
All right.
Jimmy G first.
Jimmy G. Big fourth down here late in the game. I believe right here we're at 17-10. 10. It's still 10-10. Okay, 10-10. Here we go. 10-10, late third quarter, right? Four receivers to the right. All right, there's Brandon Ayuk on the bottom. All right, what we're eventually going to get is a little bit of a cover two, all right, to this side with the Tennessee Titans. Listen, Shanahan knew the defense he was going to get. He called the absolute perfect play here, all right? Crosser, all right, it's going to widen this guy out. All right, let me just make sure I get all these right here. All right, so Crosser widen that guy out. Kittle, who's being, like, carried up the seam, get him out of there. Out route. And really what they're doing here is, because of the – it's a two-deep coverage, and they know this guy's going to carry Kittle, they're going to spread this guy and this guy out to where now they're spread out, and Ayuk should catch the ball right here and just go right up there for a first down. All right? That's what they're doing. He knows what they're getting. Jimmy Garoppolo, he's probably told to, hey, listen, if you got the out routes, take it. But when he gets the ball, he should see this and go, oh, it's cover two. The out routes aren't going to be there. I got to get off of it. Garoppolo, way too long looking at this concept, way too late getting to Brandon Ayuk underneath here, and then makes a bad throw. All right? And as you see Ayuk come across here, watch how this opens up. I mean, again, here we go. Look at this. Guy carrying Kittle up the field. There's the out route. This is where you want. The ball should almost be going to him about right now. Garoppolo should be in the throwing motion to hit him so he could turn up right there where the guy's back's turned and get the first down. It's the perfect play call. It really does not get any more perfect than this.
Mm.
They got him. I don't know what Garoppolo is looking at. He looks at the right. He looks back, I think, down the middle maybe to Kittle. Right there, and then for some reason also is like running up in the pocket and doesn't need to be, just stay in the throwing position.
Do you think he couldn't see him?
Maybe.
Two linemen in front. I mean, I'm reaching here.
I hear you. No, I hear you. I don't know.
He has to be the primary receiver and he's open.
This is the play is designed for this. This is it. This is what he designed this play for. And again, I said he was out. I'm sorry. He's clearing out. Go. Doesn't matter. They're playing cover two, so you don't have this. That's probably read one, but he should probably know right away with the coverage and how they lined up. That's not going to be there. He's called the right play, Shanahan. Ayuk should be catching the ball right now.
Yep.
With Jayron Brown, right? 55, I believe so, dropping back there. And he should just be able to catch the ball and go right up the seam there and get an easy first down. Easy first down. Great play call. And a big gotta have it type of situation, and they don't even get the completion, and that just kind of summed up the night.
Crushing for a coach to dial up a great play. And it's not even like that difficult of a throw?
No. Must have ruined my friend's Christmas weekend. I mean.
And maybe the week after.
Maybe, certainly. I mean, he did his best to try to cover for Jimmy G and not say too much about him in the post-game press conference. But, you know, again, I haven't talked to Kyle in forever. I haven't talked to him since before the season, so everybody knows that. But he is my friend, and knowing him, he must have wanted to pull hair out after the game out with his quarterback. How could he not?
Right?
I mean, how could he not? He showed great maturity in the fact that he didn't throw Garoppolo under the bus and go, no, actually, he fucking sucked in the game. He made some good throws early and then slowly fell apart for our football team and lost us the game. That's what he could have said.
Could have.
He could have. And nobody, I mean, not a good people idea like me, go, yeah. but no, it's not a good yeah. idea. No.
So on the other side, it was kind of like the different kind of story. Flipped around the other way. Titans didn't do anything in the first half, but somehow they got better in the seconds when they didn't show a lot of life in the first.
No, and it's like not that there was anything I can – there's nothing schematically I can show you to go, oh, this is what changed here.
Yeah.
You know, long, tough field goal drive to make it 10-3. Kick the ball off. Two plays later, Jimmy G throws an interception. They return it down to the, you know, 18-yard line. They get a four-play, 18-yard drive, touchdown. It's 10-10.
Yeah.
Getting your ass whooped. It's 10-10 now. And now on the drive to make it 17-10, this is like the whole second half just became third down conversions. And, you know, this is where the 49ers, where I say like, hey, they're small, they're fast, it's about emotion. They have those type of players. They start to wear out a little as the game goes on. So their speed starts to dissipate a little bit there. And I also think at times they're a little – as you've heard me say, predictable on defense.
Yeah.
Now, they're very talented to where I don't fault them as much as maybe some other teams when they're predictable. But I think third down, they're a little predictable that way. And Tannehill stood in the pocket and made some big throws.
He was terrific. And I believe, Pete, that we have a graphic showing first half against second half, Ryan Tannehill, what he did against San Francisco last week.
Pete? You got it, Pete? I don't even hear Pete. Pete left us?
I think Pete, there he is. Yes. We're talking about Tannehill on third down. Chris and I have talked about it a little bit.
6 for 7.
Yes.
122 yards.
There it is.
6 first downs.
And a lot of those, like you talked about, it wasn't like it was 3rd and 4. It wasn't like the third down, you're like, oh, we got a bunch of plays for this. They were 3rd and longs.
3rd and longs and real longs. I mean, it's one after another. 3rd and 15, conversion. 3rd and 7, conversion. 3rd and 10, conversion. 3rd and 8, incomplete. They kick a field goal. All right, let me just go to the next drive here. All right, there's 10-0. Boom, boom, boom. I'm just going to read them off real quick. Tennessee gets the ball. 3rd and 23, you know, the next drive now. It's 10-10. 3rd and 23, 42-yard pass play to A.J. Brown, where he just threw it up. Have a 3rd and 10, another pass play to A.J. Brown. Sets up the touchdown. Next pass play, he throws to A.J. Brown for the touchdown on first down.
There it is.
I mean, it's unbelievable when you look at it that way. Then they were backed up in their own end zone for a drive. Here still now where it's 17-10, they're winning. They get the ball on their own three-yard line. They make a few good plays, but then they have a 3rd and 8 and get another first down. Have a 3rd and 6. They finally get stopped and make the punt. 49ers get the ball, go get that game-tying score. But, again, I'm not one to boil games down to things like that. That was really where we could boil it down in this one.
When you look ahead in the AFC, I kind of feel like Tennessee is the team not getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
They've been winning kind of ugly.
Uh-huh.
Tannehill, I was really excited to see him without Henry. He's been a little bit lesser than.
Well,
and Henry hasn't been around. So
right.
They haven't gotten a lot of attention.
Yeah.
It's been about the Chiefs, the Patriots, the Colts, and all these other teams. You look ahead to January. Is this a team that you really believe in?
I think so. I'm not giving up on the Tennessee Titans. First off, they got the two things we always talk about that make it good. They're good up front on both sides of the ball. So there's no team that's just going to overmatch them completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're extremely well coached. Hey, yeah, Tannehill's been struggle.
Yeah.
They're going to struggle without Derrick Henry. But, hey, everybody can't forget. I mean, there's been – Julio Jones is not even a mirage of himself right now. He can barely run out there. And A.J. Brown just got back. So, you know, let's not all of us be unrealistic with the results we expect with that many good players missing. Brown is back. It's going to change their football team. Julio, you know, he'll be healthy for the playoffs. He's still limping around and not himself there that way, but that's what's hurt them. But I am a believer in the Titans. I am. They know how to manage games. They had that little disease of turning the ball over for a few weeks. Yeah. But for the most part, Tennessee is like, you know, they're New England-y. They kind of let you screw the game up. And we just hang in there. We play. We manage situations right. You'll screw up once or twice, and we'll capitalize that, and we'll win the game. Didn't look that great, but we won.
They play the Dolphins this weekend in one of the best games of the weekend. You think Miami keeps that winning streak going, or does it end there in Tennessee?
This will be interesting. This is where they definitely need A.J. Brown and Julio Jones to be somewhat healthy.
Yeah.
Because they're going to have to deal with Xavier Howard and Byron Jones and all these crazy blitz looks, and they're going to get some opportunities. If they can do that, they'll take advantage.
Be a big opportunity for Miami, too, because outside of beating Lamar Jackson,
right,
seven-game win streak is great, but, I mean, it's a lot of backup quarterbacks and the teams that aren't
not
playing real well. Yep. Play of the fucking day. We stay in the AFC. Joe Burrow, and I know that Baltimore didn't have the team it wanted to have defensively playing, but, man, that was fun to watch.
Fun to watch. I mean, again, Baltimore's really compromised.
Extremely.
I mean, it's really tough.
Almost wasn't even fair.
No, it's almost not fair. And that's really, as I watched the game and turned on the film yesterday, I was like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of throws where you just go, Jamar Chase runs a 10-yard curl route. There's not a corner within 5 yards of him. He throws it to him. He turns around. He runs for another 8 yards, 15-yard gain on a curl route.
Right.
You know, 6-yard hitch route by Higgins. He catches the ball. He turns up the field, 15 yards.
It was like a spring game. Every now and then, April, you're like, oh, it's a spring game in the SEC. Guys are running free everywhere.
Exactly.
It's like the game in Cincinnati.
It kind of was like that. I felt like it was 7-on-7 at times.
Yeah.
They were compromised. And to me, the Ravens only have one real pass rusher, and that's Oweh, the first rounder out of Penn State. Yep. He's the only one that's capable of doing it by himself. And if he couldn't get pressure, man, Burrow had all day.
Yeah.
And then to get pressure, they had a blitz. And, of course, Burrow can make a blitz or miss or just figure out where to go with the football, and now you're compromised one-on-one with a matchup down the field you don't like.
Right.
So let's get to the play of the motherfucking day.
You get a lot of plays here you can pick from. Let's go with Tyler Boyd, 68-yard touchdown.
The Ravens had to take some chances, and they did throughout the day. I mean, Wink Martindale, he's got every defense under the sun, like a Belichick or, you know, some of the great D coordinators in the game. I mean, listen, they had plays where, you know, you hear me, like, be game plan specific, try to do something, take away. I mean, they have plays in this game where they doubled Chase, they doubled Higgins, and they doubled Boyd all in the same play. Like, all three guys. They put six guys on three and said, we're going to take you away. Few of them, it didn't matter. The long pass to Higgins that was down the field for the bomb route, that was one of those plays. All three receivers were doubled. He just said, Higgins is 6'5", and a freak him and throw it up, and he caught it.
Yeah.
I mean, they are talented here. This is going to be kind of clear go, out. It's a play they run a lot. I can't even remember what they do at the top of the screen. Oh, it's clear go and maybe a little out here, all right? The Ravens are in man-to-man, okay? And what's weird about it is it's odd. I think it's man-to-man. I don't see any other clues to say it's anything else other than this matchup right here.
Hmm.
I mean, Patrick Queen's playing Tyler Boyd one-on-one. That's usually not man-to-man, linebacker on receiver.
Not a good idea.
Now, maybe Wink Martindale, defensive coordinator for the Ravens, is taking a chance going, wait, listen, I got to take some chances here and there. I got a good feel that when they get in these sets, they're going to be short throws. Queen's really athletic. I'll trust him to cover Boyd on a 5 or 8 yard route. I'll roll the dice here. I don't know. I don't. But again, I watch this play unfold, you're going to see this corner's back turn to the middle of the field. This corner's back turn to the middle of the field. Everything about this play to me says man coverage. And then this safety really flies over here. I guess he's worried about Chase and Higgins and that matchup to where now Boyd, who runs the little out and up, safety gone, Queen takes the bait. There's nobody here to stop him. And, you know, we've talked about cover three sometimes where this guy has to steal seams, right?
Right.
But his back's going to be turned to the inside of the field. So it's man. And, again, I don't know exactly what the deal was here. But, again, if we still frame this right here, I mean, nothing here tells me it's a zone coverage. This is just man free. A guy lurking free in the middle of the field, safety deep, who's cheating over here. And I think they just rolled the dice. I think. Unless there's some crazy zone coverage call that I'm missing out on here. But as you see there, Queen, who's playing the out route, he bites it, and almost like he's just like, oh, shit, I'm beat. It's over.
Pretty cool concept. Like, you don't see that
in the middle
much.
Of the field a whole lot, especially.
Yeah.
No. This is more of usually a West Coast red zone play. We're on the five-yard line.
Yeah.
We run that little jam it in there, get 1 yard deep in the end zone type of play, and you overplay it, and now we get a touchdown in the back of the end zone, right?
Yeah.
That's where you usually see it. It's rare to see it, yeah, on second and eight in the middle of the field, but easiest throw of Joe Burrow's NFL career here, where you hit Boyd, and, I mean, it's gone.
Yeah.
Nobody's even, like, close to him for the easiest touchdown both of those guys will get.
And Cincinnati playing pretty well now heading
They're
into –
They're fun to watch on offense.
They
are. They are very fun to watch on offense. Defense is my concern with Cincinnati.
Yeah.
There's talent, but it's just a little too simple at times, and I'm worried about that. And if anybody's wondering what that noise is, they decided to vacuum the floor behind us right here as we're finishing up the show.
I think it's your office.
It might be. It's infected.
It was a moment ago. Hey, and this falls under the category to finish up here, ask and you shall receive.
Yeah.
We have a poem here.
I love it. It's my man, Tomas.
Tomas has been part of the show.
Tomas is the man here. I mean, he obviously likes us and likes you
yeah.
to write a poem about you.
So, like, last week I said – I found out you guys had a poem written that you read on a Monday. I said, we need one for a Wednesday.
Right.
And our man Tomas from Brazil steps up and provides this. Hey, Paul, as you requested, here's a poem for tomorrow. Fresh off the shelf, Wednesday Pod is here. True Grit himself, our man Paulie B. The homies are waiting for the film review, and I'll be here praising all the way from Brazil. What I like about it is that he didn't feel like he had to rhyme.
Didn't perfectly rhyme there. No.
Right?
It was kind of like real poetry there. It's like some rhyme, but some real meaningful stuff here.
Awesome.
Yes.
Touched.
Way to go,
thank
Tomas.
You, man. That's really cool. I wish we had some swag.
Yeah.
Pete, that we could send out internationally.
Yeah, we're going to work on it.
We're going to get some.
Like,
he's earned
Ahmed's
it.
Wife
yes.
made unbuttoned T-shirts.
For real?
Yes. And Ahmed wore it on the podcast on Monday.
How was it?
And, I mean, I know I'm a little biased. It's my, but, like, they look really cool.
She just – is this something she does?
She
or
did.
Just...
I don't know what inspired her to do it.
Yeah.
She did it, you know, for the podcast, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, very impressive. So
wow.
we're hoping to replicate some of those, and maybe
That's
we'll get
so
one
cool.
to Tomas
That is
in Brazil.
So cool. Yeah. So, like, right when I get home today, I'm going to be like, Annie, you got to step it up now because there are some others out here, like, helping
who
the show.
Who are really contributing
yeah.
to NBC Sports.
What are you doing?
What are you doing to help the
Nothing.
Network?
Yeah, that'll go over well.
She's like, I'm supporting you, Paul.
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm doing. That should be enough.
Should always be enough.
Yep. Stop.
Yeah.
Don't be such a husband and always want more, Paul.
I know.
I know. Want more, too. Jeez.
There's a show.
That's a show, as
yeah.
Paulie B says.
Well done. Last one of the year.
He's the man. Last one of the year for Paul. But we will see you in 2022.
Absolutely.
Thank you to the vacuum out there. That was very nice of
the vacuum is the third member.
Oh, thank
now
you
Now we
so
go
much.
Down to the field, the third member of our team.
That was good. And there's the shirts.
Look at that.
Pretty damn good, right?
Yeah. So I would take one on – I like the one on the right.
Me too.
I mean, I wouldn't – if I had the one on the left.
Yeah, but the
I
one on the
wear
right
it
is
around
really cool.
Westport and be like, feel proud.
Yeah.
I'll take the one on the right.
I'm down with the one on the right too. That
yeah.
would be my choice as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. It really
yeah.
is. And hopefully I'll be wearing one soon too. All right, everybody, be good. You know where to send the questions. You know where to find me. Thursday Picks Podcast, PFTPM, Chris Sims collaboration. Check me and Florio out there. Paulie B.
Happy
always
New Year.
Appreciate it. Happy New
good
Year
to
everybody
you,
out there. All right. And thanks for driving the ship as always, man.
You got it. Wingspan.
You're the, bro.
There
you're
it
the
is.
Man. Boom.
You can't punch me.
Boom. I'm going to shove you in the forehead next time, though. It's coming one of these times. All right, everybody. Be safe. Have fun. Peace out. We'll talk to you soon.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.